Hi, I'm Glenn Peterson. I'm your host today for this video. Park Lane is in the heart of Kirkland's downtown. It connects Park Place and Peter Kirk Park with downtown and Kirkland's waterfront. West of Main Street, Park Lane meanders with beautiful mature trees and storefronts and restaurants that spill onto the street, while Park Lane east of Main Street waits for redevelopment, with no trees and businesses turning their backs on the street. The Park Lane Pedestrian Corridor Enhancement Study was funded in 2008 as a part of the 2008 through 2013 Capital Improvement Program. The study takes advantage of the opportunities created by the significant public investments on the east end of the corridor. They are the $3 million library expansion, the $14 million Kirkland Transit Center, and the King County Pump Station upgrade. However, the primary driver of the study was the failing sidewalks between Main Street and Lake Street, where significant mature tree roots are buckling and cracking the sidewalks. In 2008, a group of stakeholders was convened to discuss interests and opportunities for the future redevelopment of Park Lane. They participated in a visioning process, developed a set of guiding principles, and created design concepts to circulate for public comment. The input from the community was used to select a preferred design concept. In February 2009, the City Council approved the Flexible Festival Street design concept. The Festival Street has a plaza-like feel with different colors and patterned concrete separating pedestrians from vehicle traffic lanes. It maintains Park Lane as a destination corridor that hosts seasonal and annual events. It's flexible because when there are no events, the street functions like a typical street with vehicles, parking, and pedestrian amenities. The flexible festival design can be seen on the city's webpage at www.ci.kirkland.wa.us. Search Park Lane. City staff is pursuing funding to complete the flexible festival street design, Phase 2. In the meantime, Phase 1 addresses the most severe potential tripping hazards along the corridor while staying consistent with the overall vision. On October 27, 2009, the following tour was conducted to educate stakeholders and document the health and vitality of the existing trees along Park Lane. The goal was to build consensus on a short-range plan for the trees and the failing sidewalks. In preparation for the tour, report cards were hung as an informal grading system on all 41 trees along Park Lane. 9 trees received A's, 14 trees received B's, 9 trees received C's, 9 trees received D's. The grades were based on several factors: vigor, structure, health, impact on other trees and infrastructure, and long-term viability. Emphasis was made on the fact that these grades are a snapshot of their condition at the time and can and will change over time. The city's urban forester, Deborah Powers, along with a consulting arborist, Brian Gillis of Gillis Consulting, walk a group of stakeholders along Park Lane discussing the health of the trees, sidewalk buckling locations, and implementation plans for Phase 1. The tour starts on the west end of Park Lane and continues east. Use the jump button to find a specific location along the corridor. At the conclusion of the tour, stakeholders convened at Zeke's Pizza to review the preferred design option and discuss the Phase 1 implementation plan. You can find the video for this meeting, along with other information, on the Park Lane website. Go to www.ci.kirkland.wa.us and search Park Lane.
So as you know, the City Council started this visioning process about a year ago, a little over a year ago, and they asked us to try to create a community vision and involve all the stakeholders, property owners, businesses, users of the corridor, neighborhoods. So we created a stakeholder group, and we started surveying the group and all the property owners about the vision. At the top of the vision was the Park Lane tree canopy. The other thing was the cracks in the sidewalks. Something needs to be done about those. And we worked on some concepts. Do you remember we had some charrettes? We had 3 concepts. One was a complete street, one was a festival street, and one was an all-pedestrian street. And we landed on a preferred design concept in February, where we took it to the city council, and everyone agreed that what it would be is look a lot like the pedestrian street, where we wouldn't have any curbs, and it would feel like a plaza, but act like a street most of the time. And that over time, we would have festivals and close off the street for functions that we wanted to build community and foster the businesses along the corridor. The interesting thing is the top of the list of the concerns from the community was the tree canopy. We want to preserve the tree canopy. Everyone loves the trees. At the same time, the trees are what are causing the problems in the sidewalk. So I think today you'll find what we are proposing pretty exciting, because we can preserve the trees as well as improve the sidewalks. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to the consultants.
And I'm with SBR Design Company, and we've been working with the City of Kirkland throughout this process to help identify some alternatives with the stakeholders and develop the preferred alternative, which we'll talk more about when we get warmer inside at Zeke's. The trees are really a beautiful part of Park Lane, and we want to help sustain the street canopy and actually help continue it down further east to connect up with the transit center in the park and really make a connection from Lake Street up through the park. So we looked at increasing the tree canopy, not only just preserving that. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today as well. And another thing we talked about is enhancing the mobility on the street. The sidewalks are causing problems. People love to come down the street, but we've heard from many people that pushing strollers are difficult down the street. If you have different abilities of being in a wheelchair or using a walker, it can be very challenging to walk down the street as well. So we wanted to look at opportunities to improve that mobility along the street and find ways to balance the needs to maintain the trees as well as maintaining the mobility on the street. So we're looking at all of these different options. So today we're going to talk with Deb. I'm going to hand it over to Deb about the different trees and things that we've worked through in the design. And it's a great to have City of Kirkland arborist and a consulting arborist this early in the process. So as the design moves forward, we're very much in the beginning. And as the design moves forward, we have a great opportunity to have this conversation and to really think about and monitor the tree health over time before any construction starts and do some temporary improvements along the way as kind of pilot programs to help decide what treatments we're going to do in the future.
Okay. So I think I would like to introduce Brian Gillis. Brian Gillis is the arborist that was contracted by Kari and by the project or by the city to do the initial inventory of the trees. So that was just basic numbering system and coming up with listing the species by species and size and basic data on the trees, and then then assessed its general condition and structure. And that, based off of that, I went through and we started looking at these trees with one thing to keep in mind is viability, and that is looking at the trees not as we see them here and now as business owners that own the properties and live and work in this area now, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And viability has a little bit to do with even another generation, 50, 75, 100 years from now. Some of the problems with the sidewalks, or I would say the trees actually are not directly causing the problem of the sidewalks. The issue is that there's inadequate soil volume. The normal way, even to this day, of installing a street tree is shoehorning a tree into a very small area of usually compacted, not very adequate soil for a mature tree's roots to grow into, as it would in its own natural setting or a more optimal setting. So keep that in mind, is that the roots are, as roots grow, just trying to find as opportunistic places where soil will grow for the tree to be sustained. So one of the issues that we're looking at in sustainability and the viability of these trees is those trees that we're looking at. Will this tree, when we look at its structure, is this viable 10, 20, 100 years from now? And that can help guide our decisions as we proceed with, here's an opportunity with a capital improvements project. to replant trees and then improve upon what is a substandard standard as far as providing soil volume and the environment for trees to grow in healthy and grow in its as its habit and its structure is predetermined genetically as it can. So that's one thing to think about is soil volume here and sustainability and stewardship. Actually, we're making these decisions now, and it's pretty this is a novel, as Amalia pointed out. This is not the norm for a capital improvements project. Capital improvement project is we're going to build streets and sidewalks and infrastructure here, and like other projects, the tree retention is thought of at the very end, if it's thought at all, after everything else is designed. You know, it's interesting enough that the same engineers who are on a demolition plan calling out for the decommissioning, protection during construction of inanimate objects, that is bus shelters, meters,
hydrants,
they've figured out how to engineer to do protect inanimate objects like that during construction. But the ways that we know how we can protect trees during construction is it's not applied to trees as well. So that's another thing to think about. We're going to start by looking at report cards that we signed these trees. Again, this is a novel idea. This is not the typical for a capital improvements project to say what. Let's look at these trees early on in the design phase. So as far as the individual trees, I want you guys to all to turn around and look at the oak that's behind you. That's at the entrance of Starbucks, and that is the only tree that a report card was given a grade of A+. It is structurally condition-wise, so its health, its structure are the best that it could be, and especially when you think of in an urban setting. There's very little that's been compromised on this tree as far as the tree's condition goes because of its setting, an urban setting. So in comparison, we will look at the tree that's right next to it, the sweet gum. That was assessed a D. Now a sweet gum wants to be, genetically it's predetermined to be a tree that's the same, about the same size as this oak, maybe a little bit smaller, same size, same structure, canopy, same habit pretty much, but it's been suppressed by the oak because it was inappropriate species to plant underneath the canopy of this size oak. So when you look at this tree and you can see pretty clearly, it's stunted. It's kind of a scrappy Charlie Brown tree. It wants to be a tree that has the same size trunk, it grows with the same size canopy, but given that it was planted after the oak, it will never become that. So that is a tree that, let's look at the potential for this if we have the opportunity in a CIP project. Is that a place for a tree, period? Let alone looking at the tree on its own individual merit. It has a trunk wound, that there's decay in it. This tree will probably not live another 5 years, let alone 10, let alone 20, let alone 50 or 100. So that is the correlation between the grade, as the grade in the report card was based on the tree itself, the impact on its infrastructure, and to start to look at, well, what's the opportunity here, given that we when we do have the funds to remove and replace the trees, how can we make it better for viable trees in the future? Another good example, just to point out, is when we're in a strategic spot to look at the oak, then the sweet gum, and then the other sweet gum on the other side of the street that is not planted in competition with the oak tree, and it's growing and becoming the size and shape of a tree that it's predetermined genetically to do. However, when we go and look at that tree, we're going to walk over here as a group, and we're going to look at this tree, by the way, has a B+. So what I want to point out is the difference between an A+ and a B+ and a D, and especially this is the same, remember, this is the same type of tree, same species as that tree. This tree has a couple of There's all these things to consider. There's structure, there's health, there's form, there's the soil volume, whether it was adequate or not, and its response to the growing conditions that it was put in. And this tree has, as far as structure goes, some problems here. Unlike the A-plus tree over there that structurally has no defects, it's flawless. It's a model tree. This one has what's called included bark. And if you could see this bump that's up here, and what looks like, now you could see, there's almost like, it looks like a crack. Internally, that's basically what's happening in that tree. Because at one point in time, probably, I'd say 20 years ago, this tree was either growing in a manner that just was not corrected by pruning, which could have happened, or it was had a previous failure, so it broke out, or it was pruned improperly that resulted in those three codominant trunks. And what's happening with these three codominant trunks is they're growing individually wider as trunks and branches do, and they're getting pushed out at that one point right here in the middle. And that's causing, along with what's the bark that's like an ingrown toenail, it's growing in and it's doing as bark does, and it's wrapping around and it's creating this separation that will at some point become its own defect and fail. So at this point, this tree is, you know, is health and vigor and infrastructure, has some minor issues. And this is a minor issue. This is not a reason to say this is not a hazardous tree to be removed, but it's not an A+. This is something that we would, you know, consider. This is, you can mitigate that defect with common arboricultural practices, cabling, etc., or pruning.
Two things I'd like to say is one, compliment the city on bringing the arborist there early. When I work with private companies and other cities, I tell them, look, if you'll get me in before the design starts, I can save you 5 times more money than you're going to pay me later down the road trying to solve problems that we could have solved in advance. So I'm really happy the city has done this and is continuing to do this. It makes economic sense. The other is, Deb mentioned soil volume. If you understand how things get built, under the sidewalk, the area is bedded or based, and it's compacted to a 95% compaction in the Proctor density scale, so that
for the street
and the sidewalk, so they don't buckle and weave and go down. Well, you know, it's about the consistency of a brick, and so tree roots can't grow in there. What the tree roots do is they grow in the seam underneath the sidewalk or underneath the road and on top of that compacted stuff, and you can see how they're growing right here where this root is just coming out under his foot there and right in front. And you'll see this over and over. That's the problem with Park Lane. That's what's causing this uplift is that the roots are doing what they are genetically programmed to do, and that is find moisture, find nutrients. They're going the only place they can, and then every year they get a little bigger and a little bigger, and it's just a slow, all of a sudden you look down and where did this 4-inch gap come from? So
right.
I just wanted to reiterate what Deb was saying, that it's kind of the core issue here.
So the trees certainly have the roots, and the roots are buckling the sidewalks, but it's the inadequate soil volume that is causing the roots then to respond that causes the buckling sidewalks. And I want to point out to you the dominant tree here are the larger sweet gums and oaks. And obviously the larger trees. And then I want to also point out, like the sweet gum here that wants to be a dominant, you know, genetically wants to be a dominant tree, but there are what were understory trees that were planted maybe with the thought that these would be great understory trees here are the cherries. And they are being suppressed as well. So as we get down there, we will be standing in front of them. But I just wanted you to see that. So these issues with the canopy, there's a mature canopy here with these trees, and then there's a suppressed canopy. And that in an urban setting, suppressed canopy creates problems with pedestrian clearance, sign blockage, and visibility and safety issues. So that's another, with the CIP project, that's another opportunity to address, this is a beautiful tree or maybe not. Maybe it's a B or a C or has some issues with it structurally, but is this the opportunity to address those other issues?
Yes.
This is probably, right, as far as root, we're all familiar with the roots and the root, the sidewalk and the heaving sidewalk and as a trip hazard, the issues that this tree has created here by inadequate soil volumes. So this tree is a D minus on its merit alone because it has a couple of problems with, because it's restricted soil volume, it has what's called girdling roots. The roots having nowhere to go are just circling around in what was a 4x4 shoehorned in little place for that original root ball when this tree was planted to keep going round and round. And it's basically strangling as the trunk is growing. Those roots are also growing and it's basically strangling itself. The girdling roots are. Then there's a trunk root wound on this side here, and there's indication of decay. So that decay is, sometimes the tree can outgrow it and it just stays in one spot, or sometimes the decay spreads. That's something that you can monitor to know the difference. But the indication of decay at the base of a trunk is not necessarily a good thing for the tree's future. Here's the optimal fall thing that as the tree's leaves are dropping that we can point out and see up into the canopy more. At one point in time, as you follow this corky, barky texture, it goes up, and then you could see all of a sudden there's branches up there that have no corky, barky, and see how that all of that the change in that texture is pretty uniform amongst three or four, all of those branches that go straight up. That is an indication at one point in time that this tree was improperly pruned, topped, and the regrowth was not selectively thinned out, or there was no reconstructive pruning that could have occurred after that to select out the regrowth. And oftentimes the regrowth has a weak union. So as this tree, as it is now, this tree has some defects in it as the canopy has put on weight and grown back out again. Those, because sweet gums are real brittle wooded and they're very prone to failure, they hold their leaves, they have persistent leaves later in the year than a lot of trees. So on our typical winds that start up in November, you probably notice a lot of the sweet gums have their leaves a lot later than other trees. Well, that wind sail is up there, coupled with, and they're brittle wooded, plus the defect in a weak union right there. It's not a strong natural union with the weight that has grown and gotten bigger. There's a lever arm there that is just not as strong as it could be against the force when it presents itself to fail. So there's a number of defects in this tree, all through this tree, that makes it prone for failure. So standing here now, it's not an F, it's not a high hazard, it's not an imminent risk for failure. But as a D minus, we start to look at these things and we say, okay, so 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, would this tree be standing? And it probably wouldn't. So this is a prime candidate for looking at in a CIP project of removing and replacing and maybe addressing some of these issues that got it to have all of these defects in the first place. And this is, we'll talk about it later inside, one of the places that is a great opportunity for a silva seller to use a system that addresses the inadequate soil volume.
And then the other thing we looked at with the consultants in terms of the design of the new street, this would be a prime location to move the tree back, put another one in, because it kind of pinches the street here, you see, and also for emergency vehicles access. So if we did replace this, we would probably move it away from the street a little bit. Thanks.
Okay. So we're going to, as a group, just keep moving down Park Lane. And we'll look at collectively this cherry tree, and we'll keep moving down
And this is a Norway maple. So when we start to look at the tree on its own, man, obviously it has a lean. That's not too much of a problem here. But this tree, when we look down on Park Lane, this tree is suppressed. Cherry trees want to be in full sun. So, and they're not getting that here. They're a smaller scale tree, but they're not an understory tree where they need full sun to grow, and they're very susceptible to a number of diseases. So not in its optimal condition, it's probably going to succumb to what, if you looked up, a lot of minor diseases. There's shot hole, there's a twiggy dieback, they get some bacterial infections. And the fact that this is a grafted tree, this cherry tree is not on its own rootstock. It's kind of, you think of it as a hybridized form, and being this graft here,
Frankenstein.
It's like a Frankenstein, as Brian terms it. So it has some, looking at it structurally and its health, it will never grow out of those problems because it's not in a suitable location for its species. And it's creating a conflict with, I mean, obviously there's the sidewalk and it's in an odd place here, but it's blocking this shop's sign. It's a constant pruning issue to keep the light so it can illuminate this area and be safe. So based on the tree itself, along with all of the other conflicts, here's another opportunity. This is definitely not a tree that will be here healthy in 5 years from now. So then we want to turn around, and I've got you here so we can look at this row of maples on the other side here, all Norway maples. And they are what is a mature, you know, pretty close to a mature size and habit here. And what's harder to see now than it was in July, and even when Brian initially did his, where did Brian go? Oh, there he is. When Brian did his initial assessment at what time of year? March?
It was September.
September. Okay, so see, in fall, we could easily see it in July, and that is these trees have a disease that's called verticillium wilt. It's a vascular disease, and what it does is basically blocks the straws that are the vascular system of the tree so that it cannot uptake water. So that's why it's really easy to see in July, because there's whole branches that have died back on these trees. When we get underneath them, we'll point them out. The worst trees, the trees that have these to the worst degree, are the ones on the end. They've obviously defoliated earlier than these other ones. Maples, Norway maples, and most maples are very, very susceptible to verticillium wilt. So when we start to look at, and we'll talk about diversity of species of other trees to plant here, we don't want to, we want to keep that diversity so that doesn't happen with any given tree that we plant, and that we're certainly not planting susceptible species when we think about appropriate species here. So one thing to think about too, when we go and look at the level of disease that these trees have, is they can live with verticillium wilt. Trees can. A really good example of this are the Norway maples that are in downtown Ballard. In the area, that's all Norway maples for Ballard, and they've had verticillium wilt for at least 10 years. But on the summers where there is a drought, a long drought, dry season, is when because they cannot uptake water. The ones that have it to the worst degree usually die. So and it's verticillium wilt. It's really hard to treat. You can't really, there's not really something that you can do to it to help it get to recover from that. So looking at these trees and considering a capital improvement projects again, there's another thing to think about, and that is probably the healthiest trees that are in the best condition are the ones that can sustain the impact of construction, because you've got root loss that occurs with construction. Even with the best tree protection that's put in place, there will be some root loss that will occur. So that's another thing to think about. Besides the D's, there could be some, there's some seas that could on its own live the 10, 20, 75, 100 years from now. But we also want to look at it as what impact that tree could sustain, and would it live through that construction and be a viable tree 10, 15, 20 years from now as well.
Can I throw in one?
Sure.
Just one quick addition is that the verticillium wilt that she's talking about, it's often better to consider it a disease of the soil, in that it's hard to get rid of it. It's hard to get it out of the soil. So you could take one of those dying trees out, plunk another maple in, and the new maple is going to get the disease. So it's another opportunity to consider, let's change the soil while we're changing the sidewalk. And it, again, begs this opportunity to build something underneath the sidewalk that gets us both things we need. The engineer gets what she needs to build you a sidewalk that's safe and will last for 20 to 50 years, and the tree gets what it needs to grow for 20 to 50 years in volume and root room. A little pricey.
Is that root structure that's growing into the building there? I mean, to me, I see it buckling in towards the building. And at what point does that become a concern and factor into your decisions as you're addressing these trees?
Well, I'll answer the first part, and you answer the second part.
The
question is, are the roots growing into the building, and is that a concern? Does it cause problems for the building? The second half is, then how do you weigh that when you're making these decisions about whether the tree goes or stays? Generally what happens, the root hits a barrier and it'll just turn and continue to grow. Rarely does it cause a problem unless there's a crack and some moisture. Like say a pipe exits and there's moisture, condensation on the outside of the pipe, then the roots will just wrap around that pipe and just grow there, and then get enough wind and they can start rocking and start breaking a pipe. But usually they don't break pipes. Usually they look for a crack, and I've seen a little crack that is maybe the diameter of a pencil lead, only that big on the pipe, and on the inside, the roots are bigger than my fist, completely blocking a 4-inch diameter pipe. They'll go through tiny and then grow. They're pretty amazing. So as far as, you know, how we deal with it on a concern, I think one of the things that both Deb and I had recommended is to, part of the process, remove the sidewalks and look at what opportunities we had for root pruning or root shaving and adjusting the sidewalk depth and structure. You know, maybe we could make it a little skinnier by putting some steel or fabric in it, or, you know, just different ideas.
And there's root pruning that's also, I mean, like we've mentioned before, that trees can sustain a certain amount of root loss, and with aftercare, you know, continue to be viable and healthy. And certainly that's another part of the criteria that we're trying to use the report cards to point out, and that's infrastructure, whether it's a sidewalk or road that can be replaced, or it's considered being replaced at this point, but certainly not the building. So is there a conflict with the building structure as well, and how does that weigh into the determination of the tree? It does.
I just want to interject something here, and we'll talk about it more in detail. This, what Deb is talking about, is what we'll refer to as phase one, which is an interim phase before the festival concept that we all worked on is funded and implemented. It's phase one. It's an interim phase where we will look at the roots through air spading, a careful process where the roots are exposed, and then doing the rubber sidewalks. Rubber sidewalks are an interim solution, not the permanent solution. The permanent solution that we've talked about is that festival concept. The advantage of this interim solution is that once we expose those roots and install those rubber sidewalks, which you'll see pictures of, we'll see how the trees will react. That will buy us time, not only to provide the funding for the ultimate solution, but to see how these trees react after they're pruned, the root pruning that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk more about that at SEEKS.
Here these trees have the optimal, they're given
usually
the optimal conditions. They've got a lot more light here. It's quite a bit more open, and yet they're still suppressed. They're still, because they're so susceptible to a number of diseases that they're already compromised, they will never grow out of that. They will never become a full canopied tree that actually these type of cherries want to be.
This is as good as they're ever going to be.
This is a good, so these might be very, the few flowers that they produce for fleeting period of time in the spring, And the little bit of fall color that they get as their attributes, structurally and otherwise, the trees are not the ones that will be here 10, 20, and 50 years from now again. So why not consider given an opportunity to remove and replace in optimal conditions some other trees that would be better, more suitable species for this location that would not be in conflict with pedestrians or sign blockage or awnings or all of the other challenges in an urban space like this that these trees have in Park Lane. I'm sure if I own the shop right next to this and I notice the seasons by the spring flowers and by the fall color, the cherry trees would be very, very sentimental to me and meaningful to me as well, as they are to, I'm sure, you know, a lot of the people that recognize and associate with those cherry trees. But maybe there might be another tree that could flower in the spring and have even more interesting attributes than these cherry trees and be here, you know, for long after they were planted, because they could have been planted in more optimal conditions than these were. So there's one more thing I want to point out, just so everyone can see the kind of how verticillium wilt plays out, because you guys are the eyes, you're the best monitors of this disease.
Is that the sticky stuff that the leaves drop early?
No.
When they're still green and it's all sticky?
Yeah, the only way that you can see verticillium wilt is a cross section of the wood. So in a stem or in a trunk, verticillium wilt in maples is a green staining in the wood. Oh, so right. it's not, you wouldn't be able to see it unless you have the cross section of the wood. So when we look up here to this tree, this is probably, this guy had a D minus because this has the most advanced level of verticillium wilt than all of the Norway maples here. And when you look up, if you can notice any of the branches that has bark peeling off it, so it's like a really smooth wood, right, almost like carved wood, those are dead branches. And when you look up through here, you could just start to point out many dead branches here. In July, it's really easy. It's like it either has leaves on it or there's no leaves, and it's really clear. There's whole dead branches throughout this tree, and that's because the vascular system of this tree has been blocked in certain places. So there are parts of the canopy that are shutting down, and it will just, you know, next year leaf out and be a large tree that we just walk under and think that's a healthy tree. It's green, but it's got parts of it that are dying. Those parts can be pruned out, and the question is, well, how long could it continue to grow with 10% canopy loss, and then if another given, you know, another drought, 20%, 30%, and at a point this size tree can only sustain so much canopy loss before it can't sustain itself, so it will continue to decline.
And is it kind of like the flu where it can spread, or does it spread?
It can spread, and it has.
What was the question?
The question was: can the flu, can verticillium wilt spread? As Brian pointed out, it is a soil-borne organism or disease, so it can spread, but it can in street trees. Here's where the restricted soil volume is a good thing, is that it's unlike a grove situation where you have grafted roots. Here the trees are separated from each other because of their pit planting, basically, so the spread would not be rapid, very rapid. If one tree has it, doesn't necessarily mean that all of them will get them. However, we wouldn't want to plant susceptible species here, and we would want to monitor these and certainly start to look at the ones that have the most advanced disease, that have so much canopy loss at this point. If it's 20% or more, then that would be a candidate for removal or replacement. Whereas if there's there's another one of these trees that has just, you know, twiggy dieback or one branch, that's not enough to even know. We don't know if the disease will advance, or the tree can outgrow verticillium wilt as well. So it's one of those things to monitor on a minor, you know, on a minor level of the disease. So, and that the tree across the street is, you could see how the branches go up, and there's some branches that end with a normal size twigs that get smaller and smaller, and there's ones that just stop, and that's because they've been dead for a while, and all the twiggy stuff is just broken off, you know, with the wind and birds landing on them and stuff. So that pretty much wraps up all of the talk about the trees, and as Kari had said, that we'd wanted to point out, you know, the trees, to think about them as we make these decisions, and not just for the here and now, but to incorporate some stewardship into these decisions, so that we're thinking of really after we all, the days we all walk Park Lane, we can then think of, you know, another generation and them walking Park Lane, and what the trees will serve as a asset to this commercial area and the community as well.
Stakeholders convened at Zeke's Pizza to review the preferred design option and discuss the phase one implementation plan.
We just wanted to take a couple minutes here in the warmth of Zeke's to talk about the guiding principles and the preferred concept. And many of you were involved or were presented this concept previously. So we just wanted to take a couple minutes to look at that again now that we've walked down the corridor and looked at it again. We're going to talk kind of about, as part of that, those desired characteristics that came from that visioning process. And Gina is going to talk a bit about the phase one implementation that we spoke of outside and give some updates on where we're at in this process, if it's going to move forward, and the funding summary of where we are for funding parts. And Kari's going to talk a bit about the next steps of this process as well. So one of the first meetings we had with the stakeholders was to develop guiding principles for us to think about as we develop the design through the and constructed it. And they're listed up here on the board: to develop the visual connections, enhance Park Lane, encourage the economic vibrancy and diversity, ensure access, and create high performance greenscapes. So the preferred concept is to have, as Gina mentioned and Kari mentioned, a festival street. You guys have a lot of events down here in Kirkland on Park Lane, and so we wanted to sustain that in the future and think about the street fair and any other festivals that you guys have. Is this is a place for community and a link from the waterfront to the park and kind of a spine of Kirkland. This street was proposed to have no curbs on it to help support those different festivals as part of this. So this is looking from Lake Street to Main Street, which is where we spent a lot of our time this morning walking through. And for this section of the road, you can see that we are going to maintain the one-way travel that currently exists right now and have the parking in a similar configuration as it exists, maintain access to the parking area down on the corner. And one of the things that we've looked at as part of this is raising the center of the intersection at Main Street and Lake Street, and provide that as kind of a stage for when these festivals occur, to have that kind of be the center point, the main intersection of this street. The second concept, Main Street to 3rd Street, the second part, one of the things we heard a lot was that there's no tree canopy on that street. And one wonderful thing that we could do as part of this process is to actually create one down there to really connect the corridor. And so you'll see that there's some plantings of trees, and on that street we've maintained a two-way travel, and we would have parallel parking instead of diagonal parking on that. So we looked at that, and a lot of this we worked closely with the transit center to think about the configuration and needing to maintain access to the transit center. So this two-way travel was driven by that process. Again, these are the cross sections of the streets. So the top one is the west block here from Lake to Main, and you'll see that there's this cross section shows the plantings, but there are locations, the diagonal parking, similar to what you have today. And then the section of the east block from Main to 3rd, you'll see that we have the two parallel parking on either side on that street. So that section shows that configuration. So we wanted to talk a little bit about some of the desired characteristics that we heard throughout the process following the guiding principles and what we heard when we had a design workshop with some of you. And so one of the things is, again, to sustain the tree canopy, and we talked a lot about those characteristics today with Deb, about increasing soil volume and having root systems for urban conditions, having the appropriate branching levels for sign clearance and building access and pedestrian clearance. And we want the trees to complement the existing trees. We wouldn't want to put necessarily a large evergreen tree in the middle of Park Lane that wouldn't really fit with the corridor. And also thinking about species diversity and the sustainability of the canopy along the street, so that, as we mentioned, future generations 5, 10, 50, 100 years from now will also have a great experience on Park Lane. And as we mentioned, that desired community interaction, all of these images are images from Park Lane, that you guys come out and you embrace not only your neighbors but people that are visiting, and that really talks about this is a special place in Kirkland. We talked a lot about, as part of the process, urban design elements. People wanted to see more seating areas. They loved being able to come down and sit at a coffee shop or a restaurant and sit outside and watch people walk by, watch what was going on. And so we wanted to support that and also support the Vestibule Street. So these are images where other communities have taken a similar approach of a curbless street. So you'll see them identified up there, where they've all done similar things. This is in Enumclaw, where there's a rain garden and parking and no curb. So you see all of those things are working together, and there's vehicle access and people are moving through. And they're in all different parts, and they're using different things to help identify different spaces, yet still having access throughout for vehicles and pedestrians. And a lot of the discussions were about talking about low impact development or green stormwater infrastructure, and Kirkland is a leading city about this. There's areas all over the city where you have got porous pavements and rain gardens, and so we looked at this as an opportunity to incorporate these in the design and look at ways that they could be integrated as part of the landscape and also serve the function of stormwater management. So Gina's going to talk to you a bit about implementation.
All right. So thanks, Amalia. So what Amalia has reviewed is what we talked about throughout the past year, which is the ultimate configuration for Park Lane. We went through a process last year, and the stakeholders, you guys, some of you were involved as stakeholders, and the festival option resulted as the ultimate preferred configuration for Park Lane. That's what we would call phase two, the ultimate configuration. Right now, what we're focusing on is phase one, which is a funded phase. Phase one really consists of two key elements: the tear walk, which is those are what we know as rubber sidewalks, and I'll show you some pictures of that, and also SilvaCell. So with this project, with this phase one, what you would see is two main things address. One is the tripping hazard. That is the main issue why this whole project got started. That's the root of it. no pun intended. It's really a tripping hazard. As we walk there, some of you might have noticed, or if you work here, there is buckling of sidewalks, and so we want to address that immediately with phase one, and there's funding for that. And also, we have a pilot SilvaCell, which Deb pointed out at, you might recall, tree number 432, which is over by the gallery, Lakeshore Gallery, which we would be using a SilvaCell, removing and replacing and installing a SilvaCell. So we'll talk about phase one, the design process and where we're at, and then a little bit about funding. So again, phase one, two elements: rubber sidewalk, SilvaCell. This is the rubber sidewalk. It's a product called TerraWalk. This is a picture of a rubber sidewalk, a tear walk that was recently installed in Issaquah just this year. And they're very commonly used in areas where there's sidewalk buckling, and most of those sidewalk bucklings are a result of trees, you know, tree roots going and not having enough space and so forth. And so you can see the panels. They're actually 2 by 2.5 panels. They can be rotated for 4-foot sidewalks or 5-foot sidewalks, and you can, you know, you can cut them also. But that's what they look like, similar to concrete.
How do those mitigate the root problem?
Okay.
What's the question?
how do they mitigate, how do the TerraWalk, the rubber sidewalks, mitigate root problems? Part of it is that they're made out of recycled rubber or plastic. There's some pictures here of how, you know, they're used tires that would have gone in landfills. They're processed, and they make these panels that are 2 by 2.5. That's what they look like. So because it's rubber, they're more flexible. They're not as sturdy as a concrete, as far as they're not as brittle as concrete that they crack or buckle. They can bend somewhat, and that's how they address these tree roots. This is a picture of a TerraWalk, like the one that I showed you that was installed recently in Issaquah. These TerraWalk panels can be used for permanent use, like the one in Issaquah. They're leaving it there permanently, or in other locations, there's some in Bellevue too, or temporary use. Temporary use is more what we're focusing on here in Park Lane as a phase one, an interim phase until we do the ultimate configuration, which is a festival option. That festival option is proposing porous concrete. So this is, in our case here, it's more of a temporary use. The advantage also of these rubber sidewalks is that, again, they're panels. They get installed as panels, or interlocking, tongue and groove type of thing. And once they are no longer needed in Park Lane, they don't go to waste. You can remove them and use them somewhere else in the city. Made 100% out of plastic and rubber. This is a picture of a rubber sidewalk in Spokane. This was installed last year. This one is in New Jersey, and the reason why I put this picture here is because it shows how it can be located around a tree, and since we have so many trees here. Again, the picture in Issaquah, and you can see a large tree on the left side of the picture. Same location in Issaquah. And another advantage for the trees with the rubber sidewalks is that there are gaps, small gaps, as you can see, in between the panels, yet water can infiltrate through them, and so the water can get to the root of the trees. This is in Bellevue. This was installed actually this year by the UW bookstore in Bellevue. And another shot of the same location in Bellevue. So that's, again, the first element of phase one. We talked about two elements, rubber sidewalks, silva cells. So silva cells, actually, this is what they look like. They go underneath the ground, so it's not something that you would actually see as you walk on Park Lane. They're frames, 2x4 frames, and they have a deck on top. You can build them as long or as wide as you need, and the tree roots grow inside, in between those vertical members. The idea, and Deb and Brian can jump in, is to provide the tree roots with void space so that they can grow into that rather than the hard, compacted soil that we have underneath sidewalks. Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to say anything else?
I just wanted to point out the construction process where you evacuate a trench and put a base down and then start putting the cells in. And you can see the picture on the left where they're going to go at least 2 deep, possibly 3 deep with the stackers, which is possible. You can actually run the whatever needed infrastructure pipes are needed under the sidewalk, so they can be put in also and not impact the growth of the trees.
So at this point, I just wanted to point out on the rubber sidewalks that as an interim phase, the rubber sidewalks offer the opportunity to lift up the asphalt or the concrete that's there and be able to see what's going on with the roots. There may be some minor root pruning that needs to occur with those trees for the installation of the rubber sidewalks, but the advantage of using the rubber sidewalks, again, as an interim, it's just to address on a temporary basis, basically, the trip hazard. You also gain the advantage of being able to assess what the location and the size of the roots, so that with future design ideas, that's the benefit of that interim phase and using rubber sidewalks and with treatments. Then and the silva cell is, again, just to point out, this is what we would use given a tree is removed and we're replacing it with a tree, and we're using silva cell to address that inadequate soil volume issue.
Yeah, it cannot be used in existing trees. This is this Silva cell, the purpose for the use of this is to install a new tree so that we don't run into problems like the ones that we have in Park Lane. So it's a preventive measure. It's not a solution to existing sidewalk buckling. So here, again, the Silva cell is below ground. It's something you don't see. This is an example of a project, I believe, in New Jersey where they use concrete sidewalk and then you just pour it on top. There's several layers that go between the Silva cell and this concrete, but it just shows that you can use, you know, rubber sidewalks, concrete, porous concrete, whichever material you choose. The trees get installed as they would normally do, wood, no, nothing different. And from a pedestrian or a business owner, or you can't really notice that there is a Silva cell unit. It's again below ground; you don't see it. The tree benefits. That's the difference.
At our annual recertification training conference this last month in Kelowna, BC, they had a test project that they did 2 years ago, where they installed trees the way they have been installed for the last 100 years, mm-hmm. and then they for one block, and then the next block they put in Silva cells, mm-hmm. and the difference in the size and the health of the trees was unbelievable. In 2 years, they were twice as big, twice as healthy and bushy. It's really dramatic.
And so again, before I leave the phase one portion of the presentation, I just wanted to review. Our goal is with phase one is to eliminate the tripping hazard that exists right now along Park Lane because of the buckling of the sidewalks. And the interim solution to that is the rubber sidewalks, along with eliminating the tripping hazard like Deb pointed out. Another big advantage of this phase is that we would remove the existing asphalt or concrete that is right here at the tree locations, and we'd be able to see the root pattern that's out there, become familiar with that, see how the trees react after the minor pruning that will be needed before the rubber sidewalks. And then we'll be able to do the festival option as funding becomes available, and we'll know how the trees are reacting to the minor pruning that we've already done as part of phase one. So that is phase one again. Also, rubber sidewalks and the Silva cell, and again, the Silva cell location that we're proposing is across from Lakeshore Gallery, the tree number 432, if you might recall. So that tree would be removed and replaced as part of phase one. Then separate from that, where we are within the rest of the project, the festival option, in the design process, the city's moving forward with the 30% Park Lane design. So far, what we have is a study, and that's what we've all, you know, talked about, come up with the festival option. There's no plans prepared. There's no real design at this time, no survey. So that's what we're moving forward with, 30% Park Lane design. King County is going to be redoing their pump station, which is at the north side of Park Lane, at the end of Park Lane. And so as part of that, they're going to be matching the sidewalk in front of their pump station to the festival option. So we'll have the design for that ready so that when they go into construction, they build their frontage based on the festival option, which is our preferred option. And of course, as funding becomes available, more elements of the festival street concept will be incorporated.
We wanted to say just a few things before we end. I wanted to check out with you all what you felt about the walk. And if you have any comments about a particular tree or rating or our choice to do the Silva cell at the one that we pointed out with the bad roots, or if you have more questions about where the rubber sidewalks will go. I mean, I think what we'll probably try to do is get a map online that you could look at on our website for Park Lane so you could see just exactly which trees we would be putting those rubber sidewalks in for. But if you see cracks buckling, it's probably very likely that it's a rubber sidewalk candidate. So let me just open it up for questions and comments at this point.
Do you have an estimated time of year that you're planning to do this and an estimated length of time that the sidewalks will be under construction? And
I take this implementation plan to City Council probably on November 17th, to the November 17th Council meeting, and get approval and let them know how you all felt. And then we would start getting bids and working toward the Silva cell and the rubber sidewalks for spring 2010. And the timeline for when we do those and how long it takes depends on the contractor
in, you know, how many crews they have to do it. So I would say that this is getting into our next step. So probably once the council approves the implementation plan and we start getting bids and we start moving toward construction, I'll probably be knocking on your doors again, as I have throughout this process, kind of working with you on a timeline. We're not going to want to do it. One of the reasons we pushed it off until 2010 is we don't want to do it through the holidays, right? although we'd love to have the rubber sidewalks down in time for that. We will start after the holidays, and then we'll work around a timeline that will work for you all, for the businesses, as best we can.
But the goal right now would be late winter 2010 or early spring of next year for the rubber sidewalks and the one Silva cell.
So I had a question about the rubber sidewalk. Can the rubber sidewalk work with the cells?
With the Silva cell?
Uh-huh.
Yes, they can. They can work with the Silva cells, concrete sidewalks, porous concrete sidewalks. Yes.
So why not leave the rubber, or the, yeah, why not leave the rubber instead of doing the concrete over the Silva cells?
Why not leave the rubber sidewalks as a permanent?
Mm-hmm.
The desired look for the festival option is based more of on a porous concrete rather than a rubber sidewalk.
Okay.
Again, it's an interim solution. I see it personally as a win-win situation in the sense that we eliminate the tripping hazard. Those panels actually do not go to waste. They can be stored and reused in other parts of the city as needed.
Okay.
And yet here we can have our permanent concept, which is the festival option,
right,
which is based on porous concrete. The festival option, as Amalia pointed out, is actually a level street. So there wouldn't be this difference in elevation between the street and the sidewalk. It
mm-hmm.
would be level.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just checking.
She wants to know if there's any sense for how long it will be between phase one and phase two.
So that all depends on funding. Yeah, that all depends on funding. So the funding for phase two right now is not secure. The funding for phase one is. And so that's why we want to implement phase one, focusing on the immediate problem, which is a tripping hazard, and at the same time gaining more knowledge about how the trees react with that minor pruning associated with the rubber sidewalks.
I guess I'm just trying to understand, is it 12 months? Is it 48 months? Is it
yeah.
10 years?
How long can it take to, you know, fund a project? The estimate right now for construction is close to $2 million. For the festival option,
$2 million,
yeah. So
did everybody hear that? The estimate for the full-blown project is $2 million, and so we'll be going after grants and working with the city council to try to fund that hopefully in the future, next few years. We hope the economy turns around.
Yeah, you have one? Go ahead and use that.
Sorry, I guess I just have one last comment. Just a comment, which is, while it's important for us to be able to get better time the holiday season, I think it's from a volume standpoint, really what drives our tax base here in business is the summertime. So I just
okay.
would be really,
right.
really
excellent.
Yep. It would be really unfortunate if any of this construction extended from, say, even April. Into the summertime.
Excellent. Exact kind of feedback we want to hear. So what he's saying is we need to make sure that we're done before the summer months come, because that is the economic engine for this street. And so when we do lay the plan out, we'll make sure that we're getting this going at the beginning of the year and be done by earlier the better. Good. Yes.
My question is, now that you've identified the trees with a grade, are you going to kind of take that now as what you want to do, since we're all here kind of saying, yeah, we understand? And then if so, for instance, the trees that are in front of our building, the ones with the wilt, how soon are you going to remove those? And if you are, what is the replacement trees? I'm just kind of curious about what the trees selections are.
Yeah.
It too.
Yeah. I think I'm going to let the engineer answer.
So as we mentioned at the beginning of this, we're still in the concept design of this, and we're looking that we want to maintain the tree canopy. And so we're working very closely with Deb and the City of Kirkland and landscape architects at SVR Design to think about the future of Park Lane. So we don't have an exact new tree species at that exact location quite yet. And we have no plans to take down all the trees at one point. That's why we want to have diversity and different, and that means different species and different ages of trees on that street. So we'll continue to involve you as part of that process, but that finite decision hasn't been made at this time yet.
And I wanted to add that the grading that you see posted right there is a snapshot of what's going on right now. By the time the funding for phase two becomes available, whether it's a year or 2 years from now or who knows how long from now, that grade might be different. So it's hard for us to predict exactly, you know, what grade a tree will have, or will it stay or be removed or whatnot. This is just a snapshot of what's going on right now.
And to further pound the horse, so we'll take one tree out, and we're not taking any other trees out until we talk to you. All right? So are we okay? I guess I direct you to the website. We'll put more and more information on the website. If you have friends or neighbors along Park Lane who want to hear this, go to the website. We'll have this posted probably within a couple weeks. And we'll also probably have a map of this street with all the trees and the grades. Somebody suggested that we put that up. So that people can see that, and we'll take down these signs here probably today.
I have a question. Would you be doing this in sections, like in Prepara, just the merchants? One tree at a time, or how would you propose it?
So for phase one, the rubber sidewalks, most likely, and obviously we haven't gone out to bid, we don't have a contractor, and we don't know what he or she will propose, but most likely they'll start in sections, so they might start on one side of the street and work their way down. They might be doing two trees at a time. Depends on the number of people that they have working on the project, the crews.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming. Really appreciate you taking the time, and I hope you felt that it was beneficial.
Yes.
And I'll again direct you to the website if you want more information, or feel free to give us a call. Thank you.
The flexible festival design can be seen on the city's webpage at www.ci.kirkland.wa.us. Search Park Lane. City staff is pursuing funding for phase two of this project. We hope you found this video informative. Thank you for watching today.